the endless sea. Awesome in power, changeable in mood. It can be calm and gentle, or raging and violent. The sea, with its crashing waves above, teems with countless life forms below.
The Garner Ted Armstrong Program. Radio and television commentator Garner Ted Armstrong presents a colorful glimpse into the hidden world beneath the ocean surface. A world of bizarre comedy, sudden calamity, and strange beauty. In a moment, Showcase of the Deep.
If we lived on another planet like Mars and could only observe the Earth from a distance, we'd probably call it a watery globe, with only scattered regions of dry land which might support life. Almost 75% of our Earth is covered by water. Most of that is ocean. Vast expanses of mineral-laden water swirling slowly about the globe, pushed by wind currents and pulled to and fro by the gravity of sun and moon. Here at the end of land, the waves of the sea crash against the rocks, wearing and breaking them. As the tides flow out, pools of water remain behind, teeming with small creatures, especially fit for the eternally changing harsh environment of the coastline. These tide pools here at the edge of life give man a unique vision of life in that other world on Earth, the world beneath the waves. All living things along the rocky shore are continuously subjected to the constant pounding of the waves, hour after hour, day after day, week after week. These sea creatures must not only avoid being smashed by the force of the waves, but also they must keep from being washed away. Barnacles and oysters cement themselves firmly in place when they first settle as larvae, never again to move as long as they live. Mussels attach strong anchor lines, known as byssus threads, to the rocks. Sea urchins often wedge themselves firmly into crevices from which the waves cannot dislodge them. Seaweeds such as kelp and sea lettuces, as well as long-branching animal colonies, sea whips, hydroids, and other anchored forms, simply sway back and forth with each wave billowing out on the water as it rushes by. The sea star, starfish, on the other hand, is able to survive this rugged world of crashing waves and swirling tide by clinging to a rock with its hundreds of tiny sucking tube feet. Sea stars, a member of the echinoderm family, come in a variety of colors, sizes, and even number of arms. The most common sea stars have five arms attached to a circular body. Some species have six, 10, 11, or even 21 arms. There are more than 1,000 species of sea stars. This rare basket star is a strange-looking one. The delicate serpent star is yet another example. On the underside of the sea star are dozens of tiny elastic structures that move like legs with the help of water that is pumped into them. Water enters through a sieve plate in the sea star's skin and is forced by muscles into each tube foot. The water makes each tube larger and extends the elastic foot outward. At the tip of each foot is a tiny white suction cup. These suction cups are coated with a sticky adhesive which helps the animal cling to rocks. In this way, its unique tube-like feet either hold the animal to a hard surface or enable it to move slowly in any direction. But how does a slow-moving animal get food? It must sneak up on its prey, such as this scallop. The scallop can escape rapidly by squirting out a jet of water. The sea star must then search the ocean floor for other prey, such as mussels and other shellfish that are attached to the sea bottom. but these animals are well protected by hard shells. Now watch how the sea star slowly wraps its arms around the mussel and attaches its tube feet to the shells, pulling until the mussel weakens. As the shells separate, the sea star opens its mouth and inserts part of its stomach into the mussel. The stomach juices will digest the mussel outside the sea star's own body. When the mussel's soft body has been completely digested, the sea star pulls back its stomach and drops the mussel shell, which is indigestible. Sea stars eat other sea animals and consume yearly tons of shellfish such as oysters, barnacles, snails, and clams. The sea star must feed on those animals that move more slowly than it does or that do not move at all. Anchored to the shore rock and in the shallow seas, the deadly sea anemone looks like a spongy pink plant. If you're a fish, don't venture too near, because poison and death wait to reward the curious and the admiring visitor. Each tentacle contains small, stinging cells with tiny, hollow, poison-filled threads coiled tightly inside under pressure. When touched, the shooting thread injects a bolt of poison into its victim. Stunned, the half-paralyzed victim struggles futilely to escape, while contracting tentacles draw the doomed fish into the anemone's mouth. But these playful clownfish seem to enjoy life in the midst of such danger. Nearly every anemone has three or four clownfish or damselfish to act as bait for the trap, waiting for scraps. Each one knows its own anemone and returns to it. The anemone plant somehow knows its fish and may kill any intruding clownfish. This is a mutually beneficial existence where the fish have a safe refuge in which to live and store food, and perhaps the fish help the anemone by luring victims into the tentacles. The partnership formed by sea anemones and clownfish is just one of the many examples of mutual cooperation found among marine creatures. The question is, how do evolutionists solve the problem of symbiosis, of mutual partnerships, or for that matter, of any of the intricate questions of the origin of life? In a moment, we'll continue the showcase of the deep.
Many of the wonders of the world around us deserve to be stopped and appreciated in greater detail. To complement its articles on world events, financial planning, religion, and family issues, Plain Truth Magazine provides its readers with colorful layouts on nature and the world about us. If you would like an opportunity to stop and appreciate the marvels of creation in greater detail, send for your free subscription to the Plain Truth Magazine. There's no cost or obligation. For your free copy, call 800-423-4444, toll free. That's 800-423-4444. Or you may write Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California, 91123.
The sea is likened to an enchanting mistress which beckons men from every clime and place back again and again to explore her deeps, plunder her wealth, and ponder her mysteries. We find assurance in the steady parade of waves, something of value and worth in the unchanging coastline, ever withstanding the crash and fury of wind and storm. It sometimes seems incredible to man that so many living creatures inhabit such a harsh, unforgiving environment as the ocean and the ocean shore. Yet they do, in multitudes and in vast variety. From kelp and sea urchins, diatoms and fiddler crabs, to tuna and porpoises, manta rays and great blue whales. Though seemingly quiet and tranquil, the watery world beneath the waves never ceases to present the unusual, the unexpected and the surprising. No one likes to be someone else's lunch, and crabs are no exception. So the hermit crab chooses to hide in an old shell or an abandoned home. Regardless of heavily armored claws, hermit crabs have a very soft, unprotected lower body. If one has somehow lost its shell, it is willing to fight off another naked hermit to win the safety of a new home. His cousin, the blue crab, isn't quite as tidy about hiding. He simply buries himself in the sand. But the occupational hazards of being a crab are heightened by the triggerfish. Somehow, this fellow has learned that if you don't blow too hard, you won't get sand in your eyes. And if you're really careful, you might find a meal. Using his superior mobility to the utmost, the triggerfish darts out of reach of the courageous crab's strong claws, attempting to snip off the extended eyes. Then an arm behind the claw. Even though crippled by the quick triggerfish, the crab fights valiantly to the end. Someone else is crab hunting, but being young and inexperienced, he's not having much luck. A small cousin to the octopus, the cuttlefish, often hides in the sand, waiting for smaller bottom dwellers. When excited by a moving target, he waves his arm-like appendages to attract his prey. He may maneuver to get in striking range, changing colors dramatically. He gets ready. With lightning speed, he extends two long arms. Usually, this surprising explosion of two extra arms is more than enough to capture his prey. Watch it again in slow motion. The cuttlefish darts in any direction with incredible speed. His amazing swimming mechanism works like a tiny jet engine. First, the cuttle inhales water, then circulates it past his gills, and finally spurts it out a rocket tube in any direction he chooses. The jet propulsion equipment is also used for burrowing into the ocean bottom. Blowing sand aside, he digs in for protection and to wait for his next meal to walk by. The way a cuttlefish can change his color is an amazing feature. Shifting color patterns may sweep over the surface of his body in waves, or may go to brilliant solid colors, or pure white, all in a fraction of a second. Color repertoire is voluntarily controlled by thousands of special muscles. He generally changes color when in danger, he goes pure white just before snatching his prey, Two black spots against a colored field is another pattern commonly used by cuttlefish. When two males have a confrontation, a striking zebra pattern may be displayed for hours. Although relying mostly on speed for protection, the cuttlefish is also able to cloud the issue with a quick spurt of ink if he needs to cover to help the escape. Moray eels prey upon cuttlefish, but with a blot of ink and a burst of speed, the cuttle proves hard to catch. First, a limited amount of ink, just enough, is deposited to confuse the attacker. Unless, of course, a total blackout is absolutely necessary to avoid the enemy. Within such a world of sudden death, unique methods of protection exist. Porcupine fish can swell up many times their normal size when sensing danger. Immediately, an armor of sharp spines bristles all over its tiny body. He apparently has decided that no one wants to swallow a pincushion. Perfectly camouflaged, the stonefish blends into the bottom near coral reefs where it lives. But camouflage is only the beginning of its protection. When attacked, loose skin along the raised dorsal spines gives way and hollow spears are forced into the adversary. Deadly venom sacs along each side of the spine discharge through the hollow spine as the fish's skin is compressed about them. Stonefish venom may bring death to man if this bottom dweller is accidentally stepped upon. Lionfish, handsomely bedecked, lurk among coral reefs of the tropical Pacific. The lionfish spine is also filled with deadly venom, like the stonefish. Death awaits any fish that attacks. It is also very dangerous to man, especially when carelessly handled, though not usually fatal. Even though equipped with poisonous spears, they're not used except for defense. Lionfish feed on smaller fish they catch by conventional methods. Namely, now you see it, now you don't. Graceful jellyfish move through the ocean in rhythmic contractions. Bushy tentacles hanging below, which may be 100 feet long in some species, contain explosive stinging cells. The slightest brush may mean death to other fish. Unlike jellyfishes, the Portuguese man of war rides the surface with an inflated float. On top of the float is a sail that carries the man of war along with the wind. His tentacles are painful to man and deadly to fish. Other sea dwellers have built-in harpoons tipped with poisonous venom at the ready. Canis striatus doesn't look like much to be afraid of, until searing venom convulses his prey with twisting pain followed by sweeping paralysis. Then the cone shell calmly engulfs his victim, and ingestion begins. Poisonous cone shells hunt fish, snails, and other cone shells by exploding a poison fang or barbed tooth into their prey. Some species catch other shellfish, poisoning them first, then inserting a tubular mouth into the outer shell. One cone feeds upon his stunned captive, another cone. The poison tooth or fang of some cones is reusable, However, the barbed teeth of certain poisonous shells often stay in their victim, as this one did when the fish got away. When fish are captured and eaten by cones with a barbed tooth, the bones of the fish and the hooked tooth of the shellfish will both be discharged a few short hours later after ingestion has taken place. Old Angler, the ugly lady, seldom moves as she dangles a worm-like lure from the end of her built-in fishing pole. A fish comes in for a close look, until suddenly, with a burst of speed and one big glump, it's all over. For those of you who blinked at the wrong moment, let's look at that again. Not all of the intriguing episodes of aquatic life take place in the ocean depths. On a dark tropical spring evening, the female sea turtle comes ashore to dig a foot-deep depression for her 250-pound bulk. Working her rear flippers like hands, she scoops and scoops until they reach only air. Then she backs over the chamber and begins laying eggs. At first, only one or two eggs at a time, later in clutches of four or six until about 110 eggs are deposited. She immediately covers the eggs with sand and moves off about 5 yards to dig a false nest to fool predators. Finally, she pushes slowly and deliberately back to sea, but will return 5 more times during the summer at 15-day intervals to complete her egg-laying cycle. Her work of reproduction finished, she swims the 1,000 miles back to her feeding grounds, where she will stay for 3 years before returning to this exact same place to repeat the egg-laying cycle. The tiny baby turtle is very weak at birth. When it has broken the shell, it lies at rest for 2 days, absorbing its umbilicus. With new strength gained, it pushes up through the sand to the surface. If it is daylight, the turtles lie quietly until nightfall. They know that they should do this, hiding from birds or other predators. Then, with the help of darkness, they scramble over one another in their rush to the open sea. But how do they know? Who put that instinct in these tiny creatures? Only 1 in 1,000 of these babies will live to mate in 7 years, and as a full-grown adult, repeat this cycle. The sea around us is actually like a machine that is pulsating with life. And yet each creature in his own right is a separate study all by itself. Each with his own habits of protection, his own methods of food getting or of survival, his own speeds, or maybe if he's a slow-moving creature, his greater camouflage or protection in the form of a shell into which he can crawl backward and then carry it off with him if he needs to, is a very absorbing and interesting study, and I dare say something that has passed over all too lightly in most high school and college courses. We human beings are, after all, only tiny creatures that exist on a globe which is primarily made up of water. And why did we simply end up, as it is by chance, at the fortuitous end of a life web, or a food chain which begins in the sea, the air, the soil, and that we, as human creatures on this glittering orb we call the good Earth, orbiting endlessly in our own galaxy, are utterly unique in all the universe so far as we can know? To study the sea around us is a phenomenon, an exciting thing, inspiring, that ought to be paid more attention to than it really is. And as you see these remarkable creatures doing what they do, perfectly adapted to their environment, perfectly surviving by some of the most intricate techniques, keep asking yourself, how could such fantastic abilities gradually, over millions or billions of years, evolve? But who taught the turtles to navigate the trackless ocean? How did the cuttlefish learn to change color? Who gave the anglerfish its built-in lure? In a moment, some answers for the intriguing questions found in Showcase of the Deep.
Well, life's been pretty good. Summer home, yacht, vacation when I want it. Some little kids sure spent a lot of time with that. Too bad they never last. Yeah, a lot of things are like that. Kids are grown now, and Sandy and I aren't getting any younger. Is this all there is?
You can know the answer to this age-old question, why were you born? To request your free copy, dial direct 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444.
Does your mind and the mind of modern man with a technological genius reflected in the age in which you live by these beautiful pictures that can be obtained by sophisticated cameras right at the bottom of shallow oceans and brought to you via the marvel of television in your own living room? Can the mind that could have contrived these marvelous inventions have come from non-intelligence? There is a special origin to life, proof in the creation that there had to be a creator. Proof in law and absolutes that there had to be a lawgiver. Proof in life, which comes from only pre-existing life of the same kind, that there had to be a life giver. There's a scripture in the Bible that says it is by the creation and the beautiful creatures around us that we can understand the divinity of God. There is a special origin to life. Man is not the cosmic offshoot of lovesick amoeba. And we feel that as there is strength and encouragement in the lasting seas and beauty in the creatures which inhabit it, there is also reason and purpose for human existence. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
For the free literature offered on this program, write Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California, 91123. In Canada, Box 44, Vancouver, BC. Or in the continental United States, you may call this toll-free number, 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444. In California, dial direct 213-577-5225. All literature is free upon request.